I can tell you that. Not like you did.
Well, hindsight is 20/20. I didn't figure it out in time to save Merrill Hawkins.
Bogart said, We'll keep looking for Egorshin and Gardner and the rest. In the meantime, you all have to be on your top guard. From everything we know so far, you blew up a substantial spy ring operating in this country. The odds are these people will hightail it out of the country to live to fight another day.
Decker said, But there's always a chance that they're going to hang back and exact their revenge. That's sort of a very KGB thing to do.
Exactly, said Bogart. In fact, there's no reason for you to stay around, Decker.
No, there's unfinished business I have to take care of.
Like what? Asked Bogart.
Merrill Hawkins.
You can't bring him back to life.
No, but I can do the next best thing.
Chapter 77. Both men stirred when her eyes fluttered open. Decker and Mars were sitting next to Rachel Katz's bed in a hospital room that had no windows, for obvious reasons. Mitzi Gardner had been moved to another windowless room, which was also heavily protected by both local police and FBI agents. They were taking no chances now. Mars stood and took her hand.
Hey, how do you feel? He asked.
She slowly nodded and managed a weak smile.
Better.
She glanced at Decker, and her expression grew solemn.
How much do you know?
She asked cautiously.
Well, Bill Payton is really a Russian named Yuri Egorshin, and Brad Gardner has been placing Egorshin's spies all over the country for years now, from an operation initiated at the American Grill. And we also know about the secret room underneath your restaurant, where they create fake identities, backgrounds, and maybe even faces for these folks. Other than that, not much.
Katz put a hand to her face and groaned. She finally withdrew her hand and looked at the lines and tubes running over her body.
Am I going to recover?
Yes, you are, said Mars. We were just waiting for you to fully wake up. Her mouth quivered.
I don't know what to say.
I'll take a shade of the truth, said Decker, unless you want to tell us the whole thing.
Can you lift my head a bit?
Mars hit the bed control to accomplish this. After she was settled, Katz drew a long breath.
The first thing you have to understand is that when I married David, I knew about none of this. There's still a lot I don't know.
He'd already opened the grill before you met, said Decker.
Yes, and our life was good. We had the restaurant and I had my business. And he was already working on other projects. Everything was above board, at least as far as I knew.
And then the meeting with Don Richards?
And he was dead.
Katz started to weep. Mars handed her a tissue, which she used to dab at her eyes.
I was devastated. It hit me out of the blue. I couldn't fathom why someone would want to kill him.
But then, said Decker expectantly.
But then I was thinking of selling the grill. I was tired of Burlington and the memory of what had happened to David. I just wanted to start over fresh.
And something happened to make you change your mind?
It was Bill Payton, or this Yuri person. I had told him I was thinking of selling out. He didn't tell me a lot, but what he did tell me was stunning. He said that David was a criminal, a member of an organization that had done terrible things, and that his death was a result of that membership. He had apparently done something to anger them. They had found out and made the decision to kill him.
Why kill the Richards family?
I don't know. Payton never told me.
Why didn't you go to the police? Asked Decker.
Because Payton told me that the other members of this organization were still very much around. And that if I wanted to stay alive, I would do exactly as they told me to do. They even threatened to harm my parents in Wisconsin. and my sister in California. They knew where they lived and everything.
What did they want you to do?
Most importantly, I was never to sell the grill. They wanted to keep it running for some reason.
As I said, they were operating a spy ring in a secret room under the restaurant, said Decker.
I didn't know that,
said Katz, putting her hands over her face.
After David died, I never really went there.
What else?
They told me that they would fund other business ventures. They allowed me to pick the projects and they provided the money. I assumed they did something similar for David.
They were laundering money, said Decker. Probably dirty oligarch money.
Katz slowly nodded.
I thought it might be something like that.
Did you meet with anyone other than Bill Payton on these matters?
Yes, there were other men, very hard-looking men. We never met in Burlington. They flew me to Chicago. We'd meet there.
Mars said, I wonder why they just didn't buy the grill from you and keep doing what they were doing. They wouldn't have had to explain anything to you.
I wondered about that, too,
said Katz.
But from some of the things they said they liked, well, legitimate people fronting what they were doing. If you buy a business, there are always questions and inspections, and there are ways for things to go wrong. They had set up a relationship with my husband, and they wanted to keep it going exactly the same. That was clear from my discussions with them. Only now it was me, not David.
What about Mitzi Gardner?
Katz looked puzzled.
That was the very odd thing. They wanted me to help her. She was a drug addict, but they paid for her rehab, and when she came out of that, they paid for a complete change in her appearance, education, clothes, plastic surgery, everything. They had me become her mentor, teach her how to conduct herself, work in business, give her contacts, just help mold her.
Mars looked at Decker.
Why would they do that?
She provided the patsy for the murders. Her father.
I get that, said Mars. But why not just kill her? We talked about this before, and I don't buy the explanation that they were worried about the police digging deeper. Hell, she was a drug addict. They could have just made her OD, and no one would have thought that she was murdered.
That's a good question that I don't have the answer to. Yet.
I didn't know that Hawkins was innocent,
said Katz.
After Payton met with me, I thought he'd been hired to kill David and the others.
Didn't you have a problem with helping the daughter of the man who you believed had killed your husband? Asked Decker.
I did, at first. But she had done nothing wrong, at least that I knew. And she was so, I don't know, fragile and lost. I guess I just ended up wanting to help her, making something good come from something so awful.
She paused and clutched the sheets with her hand.
I guess I should have gone to the police, but I was just so scared. As time went by, I just convinced myself that it was legitimate. Somehow, I was just building up my businesses and living a nice life.
She paused again.
But that was just me lying to myself. It's another reason I never remarried. How could I ever trust someone after what happened with David?
Well, considering that a prominent policeman was involved with Igorshin and his gang, you were probably wise not to go to the police, noted Decker.
What will happen to me?
She said fearfully.
I don't know.
Mars said, Hey, Decker, like she said, she was terrified. They threatened her. She didn't know that they were spies.
I get that, Melvin. I really do. But that part is out of my hands.
He turned his attention back to Katz.
But your cooperating with the FBI will only act in your favor. You might not spend any time in prison.
He paused.
In fact, I think it far more likely that you end up in witness protection. These people have long memories and assets in the most unlikely places, and they have no problem killing anyone in their way. They tried to kill you again while you were in the hospital.
Oh my God.
Katz drew a long breath and squeezed Mars's hand.
A big part of me, is so glad that all this is finally out in the open. It's actually such a relief. It was tearing me apart.
Mars nodded. Speaking for someone who's seen a lot of deception in his life, I can understand that. The truth is always better, even if it really hurts.
She glanced nervously at Decker.
Witness protection?
It's better than prison.
Yeah, agreed Mars. Just about anything is.
She looked at him curiously.
You sound like you speak from experience.
What better place is there to speak from? Replied Mars.
Chapter 78. Decker and the House. Again. Where he'd found the bodies of his family. He couldn't seem to stay away, even with everything else going on. It was a magnet, and he was a chunk of metal. His phone dinged. It was from the ME. As he read down the email, he learned that more sophisticated tests had been performed on the DNA found under Abigail's fingernails. The results were shocking. It was confirmed that an additional set of DNA had been found under the nails, meaning a third party was involved, but they conclusively ruled out that party being a blood relation to Merrill Hawkins.
So that leaves out Mitzi Gardner. So who then? Who's left?
As he sat in his car absorbing this, he suddenly pulled his gun and pointed it at the passenger window, at the figure who had appeared there. Then he lowered his weapon and unlocked the door. Jameson climbed in and looked at him.
Didn't mean to startle you,
she said.
Sure you did, he groused. But I could have shot you.
I have faith in your judgment, at least most times,
she replied, drawing a sharp glance from him. He resettled his gaze on the house, even as his hands played nervously over the steering wheel.
I guess you're wondering what I'm doing here,
she asked.
No, I'm just assuming that you thought you'd find me here when you went to the Residence Inn and I wasn't there.
Well, you'd be wrong.
He glanced at her again.
I was here before you.
She pointed down the street.
My car's right over there. I saw you drive in, and I'm not alone.
Another figure appeared at the driver's side window and tapped on the glass. An annoyed Decker unlocked the doors once more, and Mars climbed into the back seat.
So you were spying on me? Decker said angrily.
How could we be, when we got here first, said Mars. I just wanted to see your old home, Decker. It's nice.
Decker gazed out the window.
It was nice, he said quietly. The first and probably only home I'll ever have.
Don't be too sure about that, said Mars. Life throws you curveballs. You and I both know that.
Decker glanced in the mirror at him.
And your point?
Never say never. You just don't know. My future was death row. You think I ever thought I'd be here today?
You were an unusual case, Melvin.
Jameson snorted.
And you're not?
Decker fell silent and shifted his gaze to the house again. It was late, but there was a light on in the upstairs on the left. That had been Molly's bedroom. He supposed it might be the Henderson's little girl's room now. He didn't know why her light was on at this hour. Maybe she was sick and her mother was tending to her. He closed his eyes when powerful images and lights started to bombard him, like before. Their deaths spilling over him, threatening to bury him. He began to shake.
Decker, you okay?
Said a voice. He felt something grip his arm and his shoulder. He opened his eyes to see Jameson's hand on his arm and Mars clenching his shoulder. Jameson was looking at him anxiously. Mars the same. He blinked rapidly, and thankfully, the images vanished.
I've been having some issues.
What kind?
Asked Jameson. He drew a long breath.
The memories of finding my family dead have started to just empty out of my head, over and over. The colors, the images, the...
He rubbed his temples. I don't know when it will happen, and I can't seem to make it stop.
But it has stopped now, right? Asked Mars, while Jameson looked on with a horrified expression.
Decker glanced at her, but then quickly looked away after seeing her tortured features.
For now.
When has it happened?
Asked Jameson quietly.
Once when I was in my room. He glanced at Mars. When you fell asleep in my room. I barely made it to the toilet. Then I went outside in the rain. I thought I was really losing it. Then, other times.
He thumped the side of his head painfully.
Had it happened to you before you came back to town this time?
Asked Jameson.
I know what you're going to say, Alex. I know I can't live in the past.
Knowing is one thing, doing something about it is another.
Decker didn't respond.
What makes you come back here, Amos? Asked Mars. I mean, Burlington, I get. But why come back to the house where it happened?
In his mind's eye, Decker saw himself climbing, bone-tired, out of his car, after an exhausting shift at work. It was nearly midnight. He was supposed to have been home hours before. But he had decided a case he was working on might get a breakthrough if he put some more time into it. He had called Cassie and told her. She hadn't been happy about it, because they were supposed to go to dinner with her brother, who was in town staying with them. But she told him she understood. She told him she knew his casework was very important to him.
My damn casework.
And then she told him that they would just go out to dinner the next night. Her brother was staying over, so they'd have another opportunity.
Another opportunity that never came to be.
Those were the last words that Decker had ever spoken to his wife. He had gone into the house with the intention of slipping into bed without waking her, and then taking her, Molly, and his brother-in-law out to breakfast the next morning, as a surprise to make up for that night. And then he had walked into his home and entered a nightmare. His life had never been the same, not in any conceivable way, and the bottom line was clear to him.
I was not there when my family really needed me. I failed them. I failed myself. And I don't know if I can live with that.
Decker? Prompted Mars.
I guess I keep coming back here, began Decker, to imagine how it could have been different.
The light in the upstairs bedroom winked out. For some reason, that made Decker withdraw even further into whatever hole he had mentally dug for himself. His head was throbbing. It was like his brain was melting. Something tapped on the window.
Who the hell else did you bring? Snapped Decker.
He glanced at Jameson, who sat rigid in her seat. He eyed Mars in the mirror. He was sitting exactly the same way as Jameson. Decker slowly turned to his left and saw the figure there, and the gun pointed at his head. He looked to his right and saw a figure and a gun at the passenger window. Two others were at the two rear doors. The driver's side door was wrenched open, and something struck him so hard on the back of the head that it drove his face into the steering wheel. And that was the last thing he remembered.
Chapter 79. When Decker came to, he had a vision of something that felt familiar. When he opened his eyes fully and looked around, he understood why. He was in the Richards' old home, sitting on the floor, in the kitchen, where Don Richards and David Katz had died. He felt the zip ties around his wrists and ankles. He looked next to him and saw Jameson and Mars similarly bound. They were staring across at the doorway where a man was standing. Bill Payton, or more correctly, Yuri Egorshin, did not seem like a happy man. There were three other men in the room. They all looked tough, hardened, chips of iron with guns in their hands. Decker didn't recognize any of them from the American Grill. To him, they all looked like muscle. Russian muscle, which was pretty damn intimidating. Egorshin pulled up a chair and sat down opposite the three bound people.
You have royally messed up my work, Decker, he said quietly. I hope you realize that.
Well, it's sort of my job.
If the optics weren't so bad and other...
conditions not so adverse to me, I could probably beat your bullshit search at the grill. You found all that stuff without a warrant. None of it would be admissible.
Yeah, but the whole Russian spy thing? I'm not sure the Fourth Amendment really applies to protect people like you.
And there we have the limits of the democracy you Americans tout so fiercely.
Decker glanced out the window into the darkness.
I'm surprised that you would bring us here.
What? You mean witnesses? Are you concerned the D'Angelos might have seen us?
Igorshin stopped and his lips set in a firm line.
You don't have to worry about them. Whatever they might have seen, they will be able to tell no one about.
You didn't have to do that, said Decker grimly, his features turning angry.
Do you know what Mr. D'Angelo told me right before I put a bullet in his head?
Decker said nothing.
He told me that all he wanted to do was retire down south. I saved him the expense, and I needed privacy to deal with you and your friends.
Decker felt sick to his stomach about the fate of the D'Angelos. He said,
You've wasted a lot of time hanging around here. You could be gone from the country. Now it's too late. It's death penalty time for you.
Please don't worry about me. I'm well provided for. I have assets in places you couldn't even imagine.
I don't know. My imagination is pretty good. And if you're thinking about Peter Childress, you better have other assets.
This does not concern me in the least.
Why is that?
For the same reasons that the D'Angelos do not concern me.
Jameson blurted out.
You had Childress killed?
Igorshin looked at his watch. With confirmation, 20 minutes ago. No, the assets of which I speak go far higher than a police superintendent in a nothing place like this.
What do you want with us?
After every intelligence operation, there must be a debriefing.
Igorshin spread his hands wide.
So this is my debriefing.
We're not going to tell you anything.
Barked Jameson. I cannot tell you how many times I have heard that over the course of my career.
He held out a hand. One of his men pulled something from his jacket and handed it to Igorshin. It looked like a metal billy club. Igorshin slid a lever on the side of the club, leaned over, and tapped Mars with the end of it. Mars instantly cried out as volts of electricity shot through him. He slumped over to the side, his breathing ragged.
Melvin!
Screamed Jameson. She tried to reach out to him, but merely fell onto her side. With a nod from Igorshin, she was pulled up and slammed back against the wall. Decker had never once taken his gaze off the Russian.
What sort of information?
How much you know. Your forward-looking plans. Anything at all that would be helpful to me.
And then you'll what, just let us go?
No, I will not lie to you about that, because I would not want someone to make false promises to me in such a situation. What I offer you, in exchange for your information, is this.
He slipped a pistol from his jacket pocket and tapped the muzzle.
One bullet to each of your brains. You will feel nothing, I promise.
Yeah, painless, instant death. I've heard that before. It still doesn't appeal to me.
The information? Said Igorshin. Or shall I give your friend another zap?
He held out the electric prod.
Decker said, We now know pretty much everything. Rachel Katz has given her statement implicating you. We have all the information from the underground room. We've raided Brad Gardner's office.
And found nothing, since there is nothing there.
Well, there are other avenues of pursuit. We know you've planted spies all around the country.
Igorshin ominously took out a muzzle suppressor and spun it onto the barrel of his pistol.
What else?
Mitzi Gardner will fill in the rest.
Doubtful. Where is she?
Still at the hospital, under heavy guard.
You miss my point.
Decker looked at him thoughtfully.
You didn't try to kill her at the hospital, and I wonder why you even kept her alive all these years.
Igorshin looked at one of his men and pointed to the doorway leading into the kitchen. The man left and came back a few moments later with Brad Gardner. His hands were bound behind him, and he looked disheveled and exhausted.
Decker glanced up at him.
You hung around, too. Pretty stupid.
Well, it wasn't his choice, said Egorshin. It was mine.
Is his name even Brad Gardner?
Said Jameson.
Or is he Russian, like you?
Egorshin rose. No, he's American, like David Katz. They were in it just for the money. A lot of money. Americans love their money.
Jameson said,
Katz didn't make much money before being killed. He just owned the American Grill. Hardly an empire.
Egorshin shook his head wearily. Where do you think he got the money to start his career? This was before he even moved here. His Mercedes and his expensive clothes and his investment portfolio worth millions and the down payment for the grill and the various lines of credit. And how they were paid off so quickly. Katz was a marginal talent who didn't want to work too hard for his fortune.
How did you two meet up? Asked Decker.
Doesn't matter. In much the same way I met up with this one, he said, motioning to Gardner. A necessary, though distasteful, part of my job.
Gardner wouldn't look at any of them. His gaze remained downcast. He was visibly trembling. Jameson eyed Gardner.
So you sold out your country for money? That makes you a traitor.
And traitors deserve to be executed, said Egorshin. Before anyone could react, the Russian placed the pistol against Gardner's temple and pulled the trigger. The bullet blew through the man's head, and the slug plowed into the far wall of the kitchen. Brad Gardner fell where he had stood a moment before.
Chapter 80. They all stared at the body lying on the floor of the kitchen.
Damn, exclaimed Mars, who had recovered from the cattle prod shock and had sat up, his back flat against the wall.
Decker looked up at Egorshin.
Why kill him?
It reduces complications for me.
Okay, why a restaurant, of all things?
What better way to become Americanized? Interacting with the customers, you learn everything. Slang, dialect, mannerisms, pop culture, sports. Americans love their sports. French fries, social media etiquette. Simply becoming Americans. Back in Russia, it would have taken us years to accomplish what I was able to have my operatives do in a few months. It was simple, but most brilliant things have an underlying simplicity.
And the underground room.
Well, we couldn't exactly do up in the restaurant what was required.
We saw the operating room.
Egorshin waved his hand dismissively.
Some of my superiors still dwelled in the Cold War days. We rarely used it. Instead, we simply recruited from our assets those who already looked westernized.
It took us a while to figure out where the entrance was.
May I ask how you did so?
Space dimensions were off compared to the area outside the kitchen.
Egorshin wagged his finger at Decker. One of my men at the restaurant reported that you seemed overly interested in speaking with one of the waitstaff. You were clearly a man to watch.
And to attempt to kill, said Decker, on the way back from Mitzi's?
Forgive me, it is the usual way in which we deal with difficulties.
Eric Tyson and Carl Stevens had KI tats on their arms.
My father was privileged to work for the KI, and so we had some of our recruits get that tattoo. However, we hid it among many hate group symbols to throw off detection.
Recruits?
Egorshin held up his hand.
That goes beyond what I can say. It is a game, and you do the same to us. But let us never lose sight of the fact that it is a game, with very real consequences.
He glanced at Gardner's body. He sat back down and slipped the gun into his waistband. Decker said,
One thing I don't get. Missy said her husband placed people in high-end jobs, in law, finance, high-tech, government.
And your point?
Even with the new identities and such, it would be difficult for your agents to survive a background check. You can create the right docs and all, paper the schools they went to, but the background check will go to where they attended school and lived, talk to old neighbors, relatives, teachers, co-workers, and all the rest.
That is true.
and that is why we approached it in a different way.
How?
First of all, Mitzi had no idea what her husband really did. She only told you what she had been told. As a matter of fact, he did not place our people in these so-called high-end jobs. You're right, the scrutiny would have been rather intense.
So what did you do then?
Igorshin smiled. Low-end jobs are much better sources for intelligence collection.
What do you consider low-end jobs?
Asked Jameson. For example, chefs for wealthy people, security guards at sensitive corporate facilities. You would be astonished how lacking they are in vetting their security forces. We would never do it that way in Russia. Americans outsource everything, and these companies cut costs. And background checks are expensive and take time. We deploy personal drivers for executives and former government officials. It is amazing how chatty they are in their cars, as though the driver is deaf. Flight attendants on private aircraft, domestic help, cleaning crews, and nannies with your class of movers and shakers, particularly on both coasts. Personal assistants to these same people. IT personnel who gain access to passwords and clouds and the most sensitive data, and who are on site listening to everything. Attendants of all ilk at high-end hotels, restaurants, spas, and private retreats. Again, Americans talk as though these peons do not exist, and these peons just soak it up. Indeed, I have been on your Acela train. I simply sit there and listen to people loudly talking on their phones. Lawyers and corporate executives, journalists and television news presenters, and even your government officials, giving away the most critical data like it is nothing. In my country, they would be shot. I turn my recorder on and sip my drink, and it is so easy. That is why we have people who work there, and also wherever sensitive information can be captured by seemingly insignificant people. America is one gigantic leaking balloon, and it is truly wonderful. Jameson glanced worriedly at Decker, who kept staring at Igorshin. The list of these types of occupations goes on and on. The opportunities for us are endless. My agents are well trained for all that they have to do. Their work credentials are authentic. Then they just have to do their jobs, and the information flows nonstop. We will bury your country without firing a shot or launching one missile. We won't have to, because you are simply defeating yourself by your own stupid carelessness, and we will be there to step in as the victor. Jameson said,
I thought all of your spying was done in the cyber world now. Hacks and bot armies to sway public opinion.
Igorshin shrugged. Cyber warfare certainly has its place, and it has worked well for my country against the United States and others. But while bot armies and hacking and message multiplication and the spread of false stories are effective, there is, in my opinion, no substitute for boots on the ground, what you call human intelligence. People gathering information directly from the source. Humans can deceive in infinitely flexible, subtle ways that you cannot duplicate by writing lines of code.
I guess I can see that,
conceded Jameson. Now tell me about Mitzi, said Igorshin.
Why? Asked Decker.
I have an interest. What will happen to her?
No telling yet. Depends on her degree of guilt.
She may have no guilt at all.
We believe that she set up her father.
No, she didn't.
How can you possibly know that?
Asked Jameson. Decker was staring strangely at Igorshin, but remained quiet. He closed his eyes, and in the depths of his memory, he reread his most recent email from the medical examiner. No familial ties to Merrill Hawkins. Decker opened his eyes and refocused on Igorshin.
I'll give you a little more debriefing. I just found out that the DNA under Abigail Richards' nails was contaminated with a third party's DNA. I thought it was Mitzi Gardner, but the test showed the third party was unrelated to Merrill Hawkins.
So the person was not Mitzi,
said Jameson. Decker didn't seem to hear her. He kept his gaze on the Russian.
You know, I always wondered about the name.
Peyton is a typical American surname.
No, not your fake name. Mitzi's real name.
Why wonder about that? Said Igorshin, his features tightening a bit.
I looked it up a while back because it's unusual for an American. Mitzi is a nickname that Germans give daughters who are named Maria. You were born in Germany.
Igorshin shook his head.
My father was Russian. Igorshin is not German, and East Germany was far more like Russia than West Germany.
Maybe your father was Russian, but you and your family still lived in East Germany, and your mother was American.
I see you have done your homework, but what is your point? Mitzi Gardner is not German. She was born here.
Yes, she was. And you're 62 years old, while Mitzi is 40.
Decker, said Mars, what are you getting at?
Decker kept his focus on Igorshin.
Mitzi's mom worked in the cafeteria at Ohio State while you were a student there. At age 22, you would have probably been in your senior year. She was a few years older than you.
Igorshin eased back in his seat. Jameson's jaw lowered.
Wait a minute. Are you saying...
Decker said, it was Mitzi's DNA under those nails, but it wouldn't show that she was Merrill's daughter because she wasn't. You're her father. You got Lisa pregnant in college. Did she have the baby when you were still there?
Damn, muttered Mars.
Igorshin said in a subdued tone,
the day after she was born, I was recalled to my country.
So you just left, without a word?
I loved Lisa. I wanted to be with her, raised the child. We named her after my paternal grandmother, Maria. But I told Lisa about the name Mitzi.
Well, it seems to have stuck around, more than you did.
I could not stay. It was impossible.
So she met Merrill. They got married. He adopted Mitzi. They probably never told her about it. She just thought Merrill was her real father, and they moved eventually to Burlington.
Decker paused.
And that's why you chose this town for your operation when the time came.
Igorshin looked at his men and then stood and paced.
I wanted to see what had become of her. When I arrived here to do my work, she was
a drug addict.
It was terrible to think that she was that way, and my dear Lisa had cancer. Yes, there was no hope.
What did you do then?
I arranged to meet Mitzi through someone.
Her dealer, Carl Stevens.
Yes, I told her that I had known her mother a long time ago and I wanted to help them. I got her mother medicine and gave it to Mitzi.
But you also set her father up for murder, with her help.
Igorshin suddenly stopped pacing and roared.
He was not her father. I was.
This outburst didn't faze Decker.
You left. He didn't. He raised her. You didn't. He did his best to help her. You didn't. That's what I call a father.
Igorshin started to pace again, rubbing the back of his head in his anxiety. Decker watched him.
You needed to get rid of David Katz. Why?
He was like this one, said Igorshin, motioning to the dead gardener. Whatever we gave him was not enough.
But why kill the Richardses?
You think we didn't have Donald Richards in our pocket, too?
He was helping you launder funds through the bank, and he wanted more.
It became untenable. So we acted.
How did you get Mitzi to go along?
He shrugged. I told her things about Merrill that made her side with me. I told her I wanted to help her mother. Lisa died peacefully because of me.
No, she died with the knowledge that her husband was an accused killer. I don't think that qualifies as peaceful.
I don't care what you think, Decker.
So everything was great until Merrill came back here to prove his innocence.
Decker paused again.
And you went to the Residence Inn, and you murdered a dying man.
There was no other way.
And you set up Susan Richards for the murder, and she ends up a supposed suicide, apparently from guilt. But you killed her, too.
These matters had to be dealt with.
And I guess we're next.
Igorshin sat back down.
I will tell you this, Decker. There is one way for you to live, and only one. I want Mitzi. I want her to come with me.
Decker shook his head.
I don't see how that's possible. She's still unconscious in the hospital, surrounded by guards.
Igorshin pulled out his gun.
Then perhaps you should think very hard on it, unless you want me to shoot one of your friends.
Which one? I'll let you pick.
When Decker said nothing, he pointed at Mars.
You, stand up.
Wait, said Decker. I'm the one you want. Take me out.
No, Mr. Decker, I'm counting on you to solve my dilemma.
He pointed at Mars.
Stand up, now, or I'll shoot you where you sit.
Mars glanced over at Decker and shook his head. Man, this has R-43 wide gap seal written all over it. I mean, shit.
Igorshin barked. Get up, now!
Okay, but I need some help. I am tied up.
Igorshin looked over at two of his men and nodded. The men went over to Mars, bent down, and each grabbed an arm. As they began to lift Mars up and the bottoms of his shoes touched the floor, he exploded off his feet, headbutting the man on the right, cold-cocking him. Mars whirled and caught the other man right underneath the chin with his shoulder, slamming him into the wall. His head bounced off the hard surface. His eyes rolled back in his head, and he fell to the floor. The moment that Mars launched into action, Decker had catapulted to his feet. Even with his feet bound, he squatted down and then leapt forward, slamming into a distracted Igorshin so hard that the FSB man was knocked completely off his feet. He soared backward, hit the sink, flipped over it, and crashed right through the window, the shattered glass ripping at him as he fell out of sight outside. The remaining man aimed his gun at Decker and was about to pull the trigger when the sound of a shot pierced the room. The man looked down at his chest and saw the red spot dead center there. Decker and Mars stared over at Jameson. She had managed to roll forward, swing her legs between her wrists, grab one of the fallen men's guns, take aim, and fire, all within the span of about 3 seconds. The last man fell to his knees and then toppled forward. Jameson searched one of the men, found a clasp knife, and used it to free herself and then Decker and Mars. Decker snatched up a gun and raced toward the front door, even as he heard a car start up. He got to the front door in time to fire at the taillights of the car being driven by Igorshin. Within a few seconds, though, it was gone. Jameson grabbed her phone from her pocket. She called Bogart and filled him in on what had just happened. She clicked off.
He's sending a team over here, and he's put out a bolo.
Decker was still staring off into the night.
I'm not sure that will be enough.
Mars gave her a hug.
Damn, Alex, that was some fancy footwork back there. A nice shooting, girl.
Thanks, but what the hell was that R-43 stuff you were talking about?
Decker turned and looked at her.
R-43 wide gap seal. It was the University of Texas's favorite run option when Melvin played for them. The right tackle helps the right guard by chipping the DT, and then he and the tight end seal off the defensive end while the wideout drives the cornerback to the sideline. At the same time, the tight end peels off from the DE and engages the strong safety. That left Melvin to go wide through the gap straight to a one-on-one with the outside linebacker.
And that would be Mr. Buckeye Decker, said a grinning Mars. Decker looked chagrined.
He scored 3 touchdowns in the game on that one play, and all 3 times he ran right over my butt.
Hey man, you did your best, and you guys played us hard. I got stopped quite a few times early on in that game, but when life gives you lemons, you know what you do?
Jameson made a face and said,
Yeah, you make lemonade. Everybody knows that.
Mars shook his head.
No, Alex. You score touchdowns.
Jameson said,
So by calling out that play, you told Decker what you were going to do. Take out 2 guys. And then Decker figured out what he was going to do?
That's right.
Maybe I should start watching football, just in case that ever comes in handy again with you two.
Hey, what life tells you is,
You just never know, said Mars.
You just never know, repeated Decker,
as he turned back around and stared out into the night.
Chapter 81. Decker handed her another tissue and then sat back. Mitzi Gardner dabbed at her eyes as she sat there in her hospital bed. She had finally regained consciousness, and the doctors expected her to make a full recovery. Decker had told her some, but not all, of what had happened. But he had told her about her husband's death, and also about his participation in Igorshin's spy operation.
I always wondered why a guy like Brad would have chosen someone like me,
she said, sniffling.
Don't sell yourself short.
And I can't believe that this Bill Payton was a Russian spy named... What was it again?
Igorshin. And that's sort of the point, to make it not obvious.
He had decided not to tell her that Igorshin was her real father, because Decker considered Merrill Hawkins to have earned that distinction. And he wasn't sure the fragile Mitzi could actually handle the truth.
I guess.
She tossed the tissue into the trash can next to her bed and looked at him.
That's not all, is it?
No, it's not.
You're here for other reasons?
Yes.
What happened to Rachel?
She's been charged, but can probably work a deal. Since we still haven't located Igorshin, her life is in danger. She might end up in witness protection once she tells the feds all she knows.
But won't he come after me, too?
Doubtful. He seems to have liked you.
He did help us. I remember he got painkillers from my mom, though I knew him as Bill Payton. I still can't believe he was a Russian.
Yeah, but he wasn't so kind to your father.
He told me things about my dad, not good things.
And they were lies. He told me they were. He just wanted to get you on his side, Mitzi. That was all.
But I believed him, and I helped send my father to prison.
Did you know that they planned to frame him for murder?
She shook her head.
Absolutely not. I had no idea. I didn't know what was going on, really. I was so strung out back then.
They probably wanted to keep you in the dark, because they couldn't count on your not telling someone. But after he was charged, and then convicted?
I didn't know what to think. Part of me thought he was guilty.
I think he figured out, at least partly, your complicity. But he wasn't going to do anything to implicate you in the deaths. So he just kept quiet and went to prison. It was only after he ran into Carl Stevens that his mind changed. He was dying, after all. And what Stevens told him about your involvement and the people behind it probably didn't sit well with him. So he came back here to clear his name.
I can't say I blame him.
She lay back and closed her eyes.
I'm so tired.
Then she snapped forward.
Oh my God, my son, where is...
He's fine. He's with Child Services. He knows nothing about any of this, though.
I can't believe I just thought of him.
And the woman did look truly stunned at her thoughtlessness, Decker observed.
Well, you just came out of a drug coma. You can't be thinking too clearly.
You're being too kind, Decker.
She hesitated.
But I get the feeling that's about to change.
He stood and looked down at her.
Do you know how many people go through life without a second chance to get it right?
What do you mean, exactly?
You messed up, Mitzi. You helped frame your father. He suffered greatly for that. He went to prison, where terrible things happened to him.
I know all that. I was out of my mind on drugs, Decker.
And now you're not. You're clean and sober, and hopefully thinking clearly.
What do you want me to do?
She said warily.
How about the right thing?
And what is that, precisely?
You go into court, and you make a statement, clearing your father, returning him his good name, and accepting responsibility for what you did.
And then I go to prison? That's what you're asking me to do, isn't it?
Well, I think I have the right to ask, considering you did your best to blow my head off back at your house.
I can't go to prison. My son will have nobody.
Maybe you won't have to.
How?
She said pleadingly. This is not a typical case. I might be able to get the authorities to make a deal. You tell us what really happened, your father's reputation is restored, and you go on with your life.
Do you really think that's possible?
Anything is possible. But aside from the obvious benefits to you, I think there might be something else positive in that scenario for you.
What?
You've been living all these years with guilt, Mitzi, whether you know it or not. And that does something to you. It changes you. It makes you become someone maybe you don't want to be, but can do nothing to stop. Even with all the money in the world, it tears away at you, little by little.
She clutched at her sheet and glanced up at him.
You sound like that might have happened to you.
There was no might about it. I wasn't there for my family when they needed me. Because of that, they died. I'm never going to see my wife and my daughter again, and I guess I've always accepted that as my penance.
Decker drew a long breath.
But that's no way to live, Mitzi. Trust me.
Tears were sliding down the woman's cheeks. She reached out and clutched his hand. Not too long ago, Decker would have flinched from this contact. Yet when Melvin Mars had put his arm around him when Decker had been at one of his lowest points here, and then Mary Lancaster had gripped his hand in the car, just wanting the comforting embrace of another human when she had felt so scared, something had happened to Amos Decker. And it was a good thing, because despite all the unsettling things that his mind had been doing while he was here, the ability to be hugged or have your hand clenched by another without flinching, that simple act, which just about everyone else took for granted, had brought Decker a bit closer to the person he had once been. Before he had died on a football field and woken up as someone else entirely. So, Decker reached out his other hand and closed it over Mitzi's.
Will you do that, Mitzi? Will you take that step? Will you write the things you can? And finally free yourself of the guilt?
An uncomfortably long moment passed until she spoke.
Yes, I will.
Chapter 82.
Bogart said,
Apparently, in addition to meddling in our democratic process, Moscow is also trying to recruit the more marginalized among us and turn them into foot soldiers on our home turf, in the hopes of breeding even more division and unrest.
He, Mars, Jameson, and Decker were having dinner at Sud's.
So Eric Tyson and Carl Stevens were part of that pack?
Asked Jameson.
Right.
Decker finished his last French fry while sneaking a glance at a disapproving-looking Jameson. Then she suddenly brightened and said,
Okay, you earned your junk food quota for today, but tomorrow is another story.
Bogart said,
They found Childress in his cell. Dead. It was his food, some type of industrial chemical poison. The Russians are really good at that. They must have had more assets in the police department than just Childress. Captain Miller is currently looking into that.
Any word on Igorshin? Asked Mars.
He shook his head. We think he made it out of the country, the same night he fled from the Richardses. He's probably back in Moscow by now. His two men whom we took into custody aren't saying anything. I'm surprised they didn't have cyanide pills in a tooth filling. We're going to get nothing from them, but we did find other records of the trainees who worked at the grill. We're using that, together with other information, to trace Igorshin's spies around the country.
Well, I hope you find every last one of them, said Mars.
And what will happen to Rachel Katz? Asked Decker.
Witness protection, most likely. Same for Mitzi Gardner and her son. Gardner gave a full allocution in court, absolving her father of the murders. His record was expunged. He's now a completely innocent man.
And also dead, said Decker grimly, so he'll never know.
Mars said, Hey, man, you got to keep the faith. My faith tells me that the man does know. He asked you to prove his innocence, and you did.
Just give me a few minutes, said Decker.
He climbed out of a car that Jameson was driving, with Bogart and Mars riding in the back seat. Bogart said,
But you are coming back with us, correct? No more detours along the way to investigate another case that pops up.
Decker nodded.
No, I think I've had my fill of that, at least for now.
Good, Decker, said Mars. Because when we land back in D.C., dinner's on me. Harper's going to join us.
Decker nodded and headed off down the street. He looked up to see Mary Lancaster coming from the other direction. They met in front of Decker's old house.
Thanks for meeting me here, Mary.
I assumed you wanted to say goodbye.
She glanced at the house.
But I'm not sure why here.
It's complicated.
I wouldn't have supposed otherwise.
I'll be coming back to see you.
You don't have to do that.
She looked in the direction of the car where Jameson, Mars, and Bogart were waiting.
You have a new life, Amos, away from here, and it's a good thing, too.
She glanced at the house where Decker had suffered so much misery.
You need to be free of this place once and for all.
I'm not going to do that, Mary.
But why?
You're my friend.
And you're my friend, too, but...
And you're going to be experiencing some things in the coming years that I may be able to at least help you with, in some small way.
Lancaster looked down, drew out a cigarette from her pack, glanced at the smoke for a long moment, and then tossed it away.
I'm still scared.
There's nothing wrong with that. Most people would be. But you have Earl, and you have me.
She looked at him with perplexity.
You've changed, Amos. Since leaving here?
How's that?
You just have, you seem to be.
Her voice trailed off as she seemed at a loss for words.
More aware of things?
Asked Decker, a small smile creasing his lips.
One way of putting it.
Her features grew somber.
I appreciate the offer and I look forward to seeing you again.
She glanced at the house and then looked at him inquiringly.
But why here, of all places?
You said you didn't know the Hendersons.
No, but they seem to be a nice family.
I'm sure they are a nice family, and this is a fine place to raise a family.
Well, you've surely made it nicer by getting rid of the Russians.
Decker took a step back and peered at his old digs.
Full of memories,
said Lancaster.
Especially for someone with a memory like yours.
It is full of memories. Most wonderful. A few beyond horrible.
So which ones do you hold on to?
In my case, I don't have a choice, but I do have a choice in how I prioritize them.
Do you think you can do that?
I can try.
Decker thought about the episodes in which the violent scenes of his finding his family murdered kept unspooling in his head.
I can try harder, at least. I have to, in fact.
I wish you every success on that. I really do.
Before he left, Decker surprised Lancaster by embracing her in a long hug.
I didn't expect that,
she said, when they each stepped back.
Maybe neither did I, but it felt good.
Yes, Amos, it did.
Decker walked back to the car and climbed in.
I wonder what burgundy means, he said.
What?
Asked Jameson, while Bogart and Mars looked on with puzzled expressions.
When Hawkins walked up to me at the cemetery that day, there was a burgundy color around him. I've never experienced that before.
They were all silent for a few moments, until Jameson said,
Maybe it's your brain's new way of signaling a good person in need of some help.
If that's the case, I think I might see it a lot more often then.
As they were sitting there, watching Lancaster head off, Mr. and Mrs. Henderson and their daughter came out of the house and got into the Nissan Sentra. They drove off a few moments later. Jameson glanced at Decker anxiously as he watched this happening. In the back seat, Mars said, They look like a nice family.
Yes, said Decker. I expect they are.
Jameson's fingers played nervously over the steering wheel. Mars said, It's a happy house, then.
Jameson cast him a sharp glance in the mirror before looking at Decker once more.
A happy house, said Decker quietly before nodding at Jameson.
She put the car in drive and they headed off, away from this place, for now. Yet Amos Decker would be back, for a lot of reasons.
This has been a Hachette Audio production of Redemption, written by David Baldacci, read by Keith Brewer and Orla Cassidy, produced by Cheryl Smith, directed by Steve Wagner, recorded by Sal Barone, post-production by Beat Street NYC. Redemption is also available in print and digital formats from Grand Central Publishing, a division of Hachette Book Group. For more Hachette Audio productions, visit us at hachetteaudio.com. Thank you for listening. Text copyright 2019 by Columbus Rose Limited. Audio production copyright 2019 Hachette Audio. All rights reserved. Hachette Book Group supports the right to free expression and the value of copyright. The purpose of copyright is to encourage writers and artists to produce the creative works that enrich our culture. The duplicating, uploading, and distribution of this audiobook without permission is a theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like permission to use material from the audiobook, other than for review purposes, please contact permissions@hbgusa.com. Thank you for your support of the author's rights. This audiobook is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously, and any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, events, or locales is entirely coincidental.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.